Welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And you know we have a theme here at Advanced Living Radio. We want to, week by week, bring you quality information, wonderful entertainment that is going to support your life. And it's the answer to a prayer I make every day that goes, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes. Oh, boy. That's a big goal. And as a dear friend of mine, Dr. Fred, said, you have to have big goals because it's better to shoot for the moon than miss it, than shoot at a skunk and hit it. And, of course, Dr. Fred had a bit of an off-color sense of humor, as you could tell. Now, I want to thank you for tuning in. We have a wonderful, wonderful guest today. And before we get started, we want to thank the sponsor of our show, AdvancedLiving.com. When you have a moment, check out the comfort technology in these times of stress. What if there was a simple, easy way to plug in a tiny, stylish little item? We call it a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. And when you plug it in, it creates an energy shift that brings such peaceful energy around you that the stress of the electric world is mitigated. There's calmer energy. Go to AdvancedLiving.com, and when you do and you plug it in, and things get better, you can call in and say,
that was easy.
Yes, it's so very easy. And talk about easy. What if there was someone out there that had spent time and got inspired to help bring forth more happiness? We know that those moments of joy in our life mean so very much to us. Well, you are in for a major treat today. We have a wonderful guest, Randi Terran, and she is just amazing. She's the founder and president of Spring Communications. She's a social entrepreneur committed to producing media to affect social change. And this recent project includes the Peace Wall and the short film series focused on peace in collaboration with the Dalai Lama Foundation and Jane Goodall's Roots and Shoots. And through her current nonprofit, 501c3, which is called, get this, Project Happiness. Whoa! Just in the nick of time, Randi is stewarding a global initiative which integrates the message of the Project Happiness documentary film with an educational curriculum inspired by young people for young people around the world. Yes, We've got to turn this world over to some wonderful young people, and what if they were happier and better educated? Yes, hope for the future blossoms through Randy. And the film follows high school students from California, Nigeria, and India who are all joined together on a coming-of-age journey to understand lasting happiness. Along the way, they engage in conversations with Star Wars creator George Lucas, film actor of great renown Richard Gere, neuroscientist Richard Davidson, and, of course, ultimately, with the Dalai Lama himself. The Project Happiness Handbook uses a project-based learning approach featuring seven levels: happiness, obstacles to happiness, self-reflection, myself, my world, pathways to self-mastery, compassion, and interdependence. And as students progress through the seven levels, they discover strengths, insights, and skills to empower them on their lifelong journey. Yes, it's not the destination of whether we get to happiness. It's what we do on the way there. And Randy received an MBA from New York University in marketing and international business, and her passion is impacting youth through the use of media and innovative education to help create positive change. So welcome on board, Randy.
Thank you so much, Ken. It's delightful to be here with you.
Ah, what a pleasure having you. Thanks for taking time. Now, as we get started with this, people are thinking, okay, happiness, one more thing, all right, give me a break here. Because sometimes we're so stressed that hearing about happiness can just piss us off. And what I want to do is invite you to help us make a breakthrough today. So would you help share what inspired you to create Project Happiness?
Well, Ken, originally it started quite personally. I really wanted more happiness in my own life and for my family. I had read books about happiness my whole life. But when my daughter, who was a teenager at the time, was sitting across the table from me and just saying, "Mom, I want to be happy, but I don't know how," it was time to get into action. That's how it all started for me.
Wow. So obviously you got really inspired by your daughter bringing up a subject that, just said, "Oh my gosh, if anything ever gets a mother into action, it's one of her children having an issue, having a problem."
That's so true. That's so true. And as I started to look into it and started to speak with experts, I found out some things that shocked me to the core. Every family experiences stress. But what I found out was that there are 3.22 million kids between the ages of 7 and 17 that were treated for depression in the past 5 years. And, Ken, that is more than double the number from the previous 5 years.
So the amount of depression is growing rapidly.
Rapidly. And I'm sure you've heard about the bullying epidemic that's going on. One of my own kids actually experienced that in school. And much as I tried to speak to the administration and suggest things, I almost had to pull her out of that school, which happened to be a value-based school, because there was no adequate response. So I started looking into that and found out that 77% of students have been bullied mentally, verbally, or physically in school. 77%.
Is that in our country or globally?
That is in our country.
Wow.
Shocking, huh?
Yeah.
And,
think of some third world countries and and a lot of stuff going on, I could say, "Oh, wow, okay, so that's a lot globally," but we're talking about here, United States of America, land of the
that's
free,
right.
home of the home of the bullies.
Yeah, right, exactly. And on, ooh, on a world stage, I looked into the World Health Organization, and depression is projected to reach second place in the global burden of disease, and that's just behind heart disease, by 2020. So that is across all genders, all ages, all demographics. This is everyone. So it's kind of a huge wake-up call, and I really, you know, more than ever, I really wanted to do something.
Yeah, wow. So this obviously became a lot bigger, as I'm hearing these statistics in different ways, than you know, wanting to just help your own daughter, which, of course, is important. I'm just wondering, is this what inspired you to make the film?
Well, at the time, I was doing a few films for the Dalai Lama Foundation, and then I began to serve on their board, and I loved the materials for adults, but I could not find something where I could say to my daughter, here, read this, or here, watch this. It will help you. So I decided to do a film, and the intention was to have part of it by kids for kids, because we wanted it to be something that would resonate with them.
Ah. Wow. So you have this background in doing some films with the Dalai Lama Foundation, and then you get this idea to have these kids involved, and I'm just wondering that you started having the kids participate in the filming?
We gave them all cameras, high-def cameras. So imagine there are three groups participating, one in California, one in Nigeria, and one in India, actually Tibetan refugees living in India. And each of them got a camera, a video camera, with the idea that they could use it to kind of tell their stories and have a sort of video diaries with each other, which was another way that they could share their experiences along the way to, you know, finding out what is the nature of lasting happiness, and share that from a cultural perspective as well. And it was really funny because, you know, you would think, oh, the California kids are so, you know, comfortable with technology, they'll just jump all over it. It turned out that they were too comfortable with it. It was like nothing new for them. They really did not participate as much as we thought. The Nigerian kids were very excited about it. And because a camera is such a precious thing, it was really held closely by the administration so that it wouldn't get ruined because, you know, how are you going to fix it and all that kind of stuff. So it was popular in a controlled way. But then in India, the teacher, who was kind of young and a little bit, you know, creative, rebellious type of young woman, she just took it and gave it to the kids and had them run with it and do all sorts of kind of home video projects. And the amount of work that they produced together with music and titles, it was absolutely incredible. So that part of it was really lovely because they could share, you know, not only through email parts of themselves, which happened to turn out to be profound conversations, but visually we could see, you know, they took us into their dorms, into their life, into what they did for fun, sort of intimate stories of what was bothering them. So that became sort of a nice vehicle, which was part of the film as well.
Hmm. Oh, boy. So you ended up getting these different pieces of film and email from these three different groups, and then you put it together into the film Project Happiness.
Right.
Anna, what inspired you to move ahead and start the nonprofit of this?
Well, from the very beginning, the life of this 1 year in the life of these three groups coming together on this common quest. But the mandate always was, what could they teach us? What words of wisdom could they share with us about how to inspire and teach other kids globally about, you know, the practices that bring forth lasting happiness? So from the beginning, there was the film, but then there was the idea that we would create a book or a handbook or a manual, and that turned out to be the Project Happiness Handbook. So not only did the kids put their input, and you can see it kind of peppered throughout the book, but we also brought in the best world thought leaders in the science of happiness and neuroscience, plus things like the law of attraction and Dr. Emoto's work, nonviolent communication. I mean, anything that I thought, what would I have loved my daughter to have been exposed to in school? What would, you know, empower her? What would allow her new perspectives and so on? We brought it all in, and that became a curriculum that we are now sharing with schools in the U.S. and seven other countries, and actually in Nigeria there's over 1,000 kids that are learning Project Happiness. So that's been a hugely fulfilling part of my life, and it feels like just the beginning.
Wow. This is wonderful. And I'd like you to comment. I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise if you said to someone, well, you want to learn math, you want to learn piano, you want to learn to play tennis. So you perhaps study it, or you watch people, or you get a coach, or you go out and you practice. But
right.
What is this thing about happiness? Happiness, is that a skill set? What's this thing?
Absolutely, Ken. You hit it right on the nose. Happiness is a skill set, and it can be learned just the same as an athlete learns a sport or a musician learns his or her instrument. You just have to find the practices. You have to practice. So you practice your chords or you practice your dribbles. You're going to practice things like gratitude, or you'll practice things like nonviolent communication. You'll practice ways of helping others. I mean, these are just a couple of the cornerstones, but it has been scientifically proven that as you learn these skills, actually life skills, and put them into practice, you develop new habits. And then it becomes, after 21 days, it becomes your default setting, so that it's something that you will resort to in times of stress. So isn't that like the most encouraging thing, that we can actually train our brain? Neuroscientists are proving now that we grow new brain cells, and with certain practices we can actually change the neural pathways, and that means how we respond to certain circumstances. So the possibilities are vast.
This is just exquisite news. I mean, stress on the planet is rampant. I mean, global financial crisis, global climate change, global environmental calamity, toxification, I mean, food shortages, I mean, just the list of things. If you thought reading the physician's desk reference was scary, just pick up a newspaper, that's scary enough itself. And so with all this, massive amounts of stress are out there. So now, here you are bringing forward this thing, and we call it happiness, this idea, okay, it's not just this Pollyanna, oh, let's all be happy and grin and dance around and feel good type of a thing. But this happiness thing, is the way you're talking about it, is that this is actually a pathway for us to make huge changes and to deal with stress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And happiness is the word that we use. It's an umbrella, and most people want happiness. I mean, it's a universal yearning. But what it really has to do with, as you dig deeper, is having a fulfilling life and having a meaningful life. That is what we all want. You know, there's so much pressure in schools and in the workplace to perform and to rise up the ladder and show your results. But at the end of the day, when we're, you know, on our deathbed, we will not be looking back at, you know, the type of customers we acquired or the degrees that we have attached to our name. It's more about the happy moments and the relationships that fostered those. So if that is what we reflect on, why are we not taught those skills in school? This is something that I truly believe that the time has come, because it changes a life to know that happiness is a choice and that we have tools and ways to reposition whatever happens in our life and develop that muscle, that happiness muscle, to actually thrive and flourish even in the face of life's obstacles, which are part of life. We can't avoid them. It's how we're going to deal with them.
Wow. And when I think about it, Randy, we were talking about stress, and it's not a happy subject in terms of when people get stressed enough, when they get depressed enough, they oftentimes contemplate suicide. And I think you've got some input on that area, don't you?
This is one of the things that shocked me the most. Actually, as I looked into it and spoke with the experts, I found statistics that they just knocked me off my socks. So did you know, Ken, that 1 in 5 teens have thought about suicide, 1 in 6 have made plans for suicide, and 1 in 12 teens has attempted suicide in the last year? These are statistics according to the National Youth Violence Prevention Center.
Oof.
So, and, you know, to tell you the truth, there is an unspoken epidemic of suicide across this country. Project Happiness has been in a school in my neighborhood, which is, you know, a nice neighborhood. People are well-established, they want the best for their kids, but there is huge stress. How do I know? There were 4 suicides within the span of 1 year at this one high school. 4 suicides. And if that isn't enough to knock a community on its ear, I just don't know what. So that's happening in my own backyard, and there are... it's a contagion. You know, suicide is a contagion, so that when it happens in a school first, there's a greater likelihood that it will repeat itself and happen again. It becomes contagious. So there are schools across this country, many of them, that are experiencing the same thing as in my backyard. And even in a recent New York Times article, there was evidence that it's not just the United States. In Korea, there's a rash of suicides. It is common to see that in captains of industry to sports figures, but it was only when it started happening in the school that this became a huge, huge, basically call for help.
Yes. Oh, wow. And to me, what you're doing is so huge, because if someone is not only contemplating, and we see teens who are experiencing, okay, I'm coming into life, their bodies are saying, okay, we're here, young people, we want to reproduce. I mean, this is the signal from the body that says, find a member of the opposite sex, reproduce, get excited about life. The internal biology of the species is there trying to do that, and yet the world circumstances are so conflicted that this 20%, 17%, large numbers of folks thought about it, made plans for it. About 8% in our country attempted it last year. So this is letting us know that their mind, is obviously getting focused in this way. And the beautiful part is explaining with some of the neuroscience that you're learning is that same brain that is thinking in one fashion can be supported to make some shifts and come back into a place of balance.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, the body is a magnificent thing, but we have to know how to work with it. We're a biochemical soup, and sometimes the biochemistry just is off balance, and that's okay, but we can learn how to rebalance that. So, with these new brain cells that we have every day, we can actually influence how our brain functions. We can do practices to make ourselves more calm. We can do practices that shift a somewhat traumatic experience into something that makes more sense. So we have those abilities. And the thing is, with this focus that we have in our society for material success, and I don't care what age you are, you feel it. The messages are in the media, all over. And we have to shift that to the idea that we can generate a different type of success and a different type of happiness, and that's coming from within. And there's a huge power in that, because the thing is, I mean, I'm sure that when you have watched young kids play, they seem happy, right?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a natural thing. Kids know how to play with one another. They have this well of happiness within them, but through life and through, challenges and conflicts and pressure, that joy is kind of squashed out of many, many people. But I just want to say that there is hope. We can re-access that. It lives within us. So the idea of pursuing happiness from outside, external sources, that's good. That's okay for short-term happiness, but the long-term happiness lives within us, and we can all learn how to get back to that and you know, that's where these, you know, what I call the methodology of what we're teaching, it's social and emotional learning. So it's teaching people how to recognize their emotions, accept their emotions, know that they have a choice of how to respond, and then make that choice among the array of possibilities. So we can't just, you know, push it down how we're feeling or the stress level. We have to come into a new emotional literacy, and that is entirely possible. And then the social part is by actually cultivating the you know, the happiness within ourselves and the ways to reconnect with that. We actually want to be more empathetic and hence more compassionate with others, so that there are social ramifications for this type of thing too. We've seen that in schools. We've seen that in communities. It's actually very, very encouraging. So happiness is not a selfish pursuit. In fact, it's the contrary. Those people that allow themselves to access their peace, their joy, their centering within themselves are the ones that actually can make a difference in the lives of others and help other people.
Wow. Do you have any, you know, examples of...
Sure. Let me tell you the story of Monica. Monica was an 11-year-old girl in a really, you know, forward-thinking school, but in a very tough neighborhood. It's the Mission District in San Francisco. And there's a huge crime rate there, drugs and so on. And, you know, a lot of kids are coming from very difficult situations. So one of the assignments we had for that class was to draw a picture of how other people see you. Monica drew a picture of herself as trash, surrounded by trash, because she said that is the way other people see her. So can you imagine as an 11-year-old to think of yourself in that way?
Not
very happy. But as we started working with the class and giving them, you know, certain exercises and practices to do, we came back several weeks later and asked her to draw her happy future. And what she drew was herself as a vet. And she wrote on the top, which was so cute, healing all animals. So what is it within a human being that can be subjected to such such a difficult environment where people are thinking of her as trash, and then she has find something within herself that she wants to help and heal all people? So that to me was just amazing. And then there was a young boy who was identified as a pre-gang member. I mean, he was just ripe to be in a gang situation. So we worked with the class on showing empathy, showing compassion, and the idea of love and affection and even hugging. And he was like, boys don't hug. I mean, ridiculous, you know. He was all about being tough. And then we talked about how sports teams, you know, if you're in a victory, you will hug each other and jump up and celebrate. And a couple of weeks later, he was like, he gave one of the teachers like a big hug, and he said, I'm hugging now. It was so cute.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, you know, you are far less likely to do hurtful things to others if you have the capacity to hug and to express love, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's Randy, this is huge with what you're doing, because we're not only able to support people to make changes, it's like so deep from the standpoint of actually shifting. As you're talking about these things, to me, it's what's occurring. We think of like someone is like their hair. We say that their hair looks a mess. They're having a bad hair day, and
right.
And that's no big deal, because we know we're not our hairstyle. Well, you're now beginning to help us to learn, fill in an educational piece, that this brain that does all this thinking, it's an instrument that has these fancy terms, neural pathways, neurons, but the main thing is it's like a computer. We can learn to program it, and if there's viruses in a computer, that can mess up a software. We can have a bad neuron day, and if our neurons are in a bad place, we can be suicidal. We can be mean and nasty. We could withhold affection. I mean, there's all kinds of things, and here you are opening us up to this profound thing that says, oh my gosh, no one's taught you how to drive this instrument that's between your ears. I think that's pretty darn exciting.
I love the way you said that. I love the way you said that, because in the same way as, you know, driving a car, you take lessons for that, you can also take lessons in how to make the most of this instrument that we have. You know, and life can change absolutely profoundly because of it. So,
yeah, wow. And you're talking just this example of this guy that, and there's so many. My dad was not taught about sharing warmth and affection. Even members of the family of the women. There's some very stoic people on the planet. There's others. If you look at cultures. Some very stoic that don't touch much, the others that touch all the time, and just so it's like, oh, okay, it's just like people being taught different things, and now you're pulling us together in this ability to go, here, whatever you're doing, it's something you learned. It's not about right or wrong, it's about where it's getting you.
Exactly, and it's a learned skill set, and it's not rocket science. It's very, very simple. There are very simple practices that we can all do, and this is not just for kids. This is for adults. This is for the kids within adults, because we're all kids in some way, and we can all learn these things.
Well, do you have some happiness tips for
I would love to share a couple of things. So, okay, this instead of tips, let's call them practices, because that's important to remember, that anything that we practice, we will become better at. So here's one. For the next week, write down three things that went well. Do this every day. Large, it could be small things, it could be large things, you know, could be just, I had a nice conversation with someone, or, a beautiful meal, or whatever, it could be anything, but write down three things that went well, and research shows that if you do this right before bed, you will sleep better, and within time, you will feel more positive. And the good thing is that this is kind of a self-perpetuating behavior, because the more you do it, the better you feel, and it becomes something that you want to do. So this can become addictive, and it actually does shift your happiness level. So that's one thing. The next thing that we talk about is what are your strengths? Too often, we focus on what we're not good at and, you know, what we need to improve at and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what about if we focused on the things that we were considered our strengths? And sometimes people don't even know what their strengths are. Wouldn't you say?
Uh-huh. Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. You're not being encouraged to notice what their strengths are.
Right. Agreed. And in fact, that's part of the national epidemic, is that we don't really focus on our gifts and our talents and even the things that bring us to life and joy. So try and figure out your top five strengths. And these would not be like skills, like playing the piano or something that you learn, but innate strengths, like a sense of humor, or you know, if you're a caring individual, or if your strength is strong analytical skills, or you know, creativity. What are those things? And find ways to use them every day. Whether if you're a kid, whether you can use those in school, or as an adult, do it in during your job, and especially with the tasks that you find tedious. And guess what? You will be happier. This is scientifically proven. So even for all of us, it's really important, I think, to remember what makes us come alive. Remember the things that, what do we do when hours pass and it seems like 5 minutes? Those are the things that we should put more of into our lives. So that's a second thing. And a third one would be random acts of kindness. So small or large, this produces a long-term happiness that no one can take away. It's not like, oh, you bought a new iPod or something like that. And that's exciting for a week, and then the thrill is gone. No, when you help somebody, even you know, helping an elderly neighbor carry some groceries to her house, or the little things like that, it gives you a warm feeling, and that stays with you. So that's another cornerstone. And this is one of my favorites. It's called a gratitude visit. So, Ken, I'm sure you have people in your life that you have, that have touched you, that you are grateful that they have been in your life. Would you say?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Lots,
yeah. And for all of us, I believe that there's someone like that in everyone's life. And it could have been one teacher. It could be you know, one friend of a friend who might have said, you know, a passing comment that gave us, you know, a reminder of what we could be. So whatever it is, write a letter to someone who did something important in your life. It could be just short, like 300 words. And in that letter, say what they said or what they did and how it affected you at the time, and how it has influenced your life. And if you get in touch with them and let them know you'd like to visit, you don't have to tell them why. When you get there, you read the letter to them. Oh my gosh, that will be such a memorable experience for both of you.
Mm. So, I love that. You know, while you're sharing that, Randy, I'm thinking of someone has written this, and they may or may not be able to share it because sometimes people aren't available. But
yeah.
What I thought to myself was, well, if you had this, and whether you could share it with the person or not, wouldn't it be fun if there was a this gratitude center as part of the Project Happiness, where people could post these things of gratitude, these stories of love, of caring, of support, so that someone that's having a bad neuron day, it could go to the website or download something to their phone and take in one or two or five of these things and go, wow, there's all this kindness in the world that we won't be seeing on the nightly news, the nightly scare you out of your socks news.
That's so right. I love it. I absolutely love it. I love it. So I'm going to make an invitation right now to your listeners, to anybody who feels inspired to write a letter of gratitude for someone who has touched them in their life. Please do send that to me, and I am inspired to have a section on the website. And thank you, Ken, for such a wonderful idea to post some of these stories to inspire other people. So look what happens. Look how we're co-creating together.
Oh, boy.
Yay, Ken.
Yay, Randy. Yay, creative source.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the last thing I'll share is it's so important to connect. We are social beings. We need that warmth and connection from others. But I look at connection on three levels. One is connect with your inner wisdom, with that voice, that presence there inside of you always, that in the quiet moments has so much to share. So that's one level. The next level is to people, to friends, to family, even to people that you might not know, who need some warmth or some caring. And then the third thing is connect to something greater, something that inspires you, something that where you can take your particular gift, your talent, your love, so that you can make a difference in some way, small or large, it doesn't matter. We need everyone, and every small act is equally important. So that's one way that our happiness is contagious, and how we can actually be the change that we want to see in the world.
Mm. Oh, boy, I love it. So, with that statement, sounds like you're saying that it's up to each of us to find our own happiness.
I absolutely agree with that. You know, the thing is, well, I've read about, you know, the happiness index, what countries are the happiest in the world. And guess what? United States is not up there in the top 10. It's in some things it's not even close. So clearly we cannot wait for governments to make us happy. We cannot rely on schools to do that for our kids. The power is inside each and every one of us. And we all have the potential to reconnect with that source of happiness and to be agents. I call it agents of happiness, not only for ourselves, and it starts within ourselves, but then for our communities. And because this is a movement, and it takes all of us. And at the end of the day, happiness is the greatest definition of our success. And we're all in this together.
I love it. You know, as you're saying that, it's interesting. The words that I'm wanting to pull together is like a contrast, because for a long time on the planet, information has been passed down from generation to generation about what it is to be a human being, what it is to be part of a community, that all these things that we have then said, okay, well, this is now our truth, especially from a spiritual basis. There's been different groups of religions on the planet, and if you take a look at them, they say, well, okay, here, this is what has been passed down from generation to generation. This is our truth about ourselves and our relationship to our Creator. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, interestingly, it would be kind of fun to stand back from that far enough to be able to say, instead of, well, this is the truth, to say, actually, well, these are the assumptions that we've made. We don't really have direct proof of this stuff, but this is our assumption, and based on these assumptions, we've taken these actions. And to me, that's a more accurate verbal representation of what's taken place. And from that place of assumptions, then it's like, oh, okay, well, we can start making some different assumptions, like the government's not going to make us happy, it's our connection to ourselves, our connection to something greater. So I think that's just kind of fascinating how you're opening all these doors that are just so beautiful for helping us to be supported, to be better at operating this instrument between our ears, and to be supported, not just to say, okay, well, go be happy, you can figure it out. You're teaching us this stuff. I love it.
Yeah. It is something that is within each of us, and we all have the ability to generate our own happiness and really, be in charge of creating the life that we want. Anybody can influence their own life, using the practices that are available, the tools that are around. It's just a wonderful time right now, because there's a greater listening for this, and more people are interested in this conversation. They're sick of the negativity. They're sick of all the horror stories on the news. Like, enough. It's time to activate our own happiness and move ourselves forward. So it's programs like yours that do it, Ken. So I'm really
grateful for
what you are bringing forth.
Well, thank you. And Randy, I want to make sure people know that they can take some action, like to participate in Project Happiness. Go to your website, projecthappiness.com, and
yes. The website has a wealth of information for people to download freely. Also, they could see the trailer for our film, Project Happiness, which I'm so grateful is winning awards across the world. We won an audience Choice Award in Korea just very recently, with the category of "It's Okay to Be Different," and it's really catching on. So we'd love to invite you to book a screening of the film in your community, so together we can get this conversation going. And we will even give you 10 questions to use after the film, so you can seed a very fascinating, lively discussion and just bring this possibility to your community. So you can find us through the web, www.projecthappiness.com. Another thing is you can start a book club group with the Project Happiness Handbook that's available on Amazon. And we have materials where you can start your own happiness circle with friends. And this is such a rewarding way to deepen your own happiness in a lovely group where you can share, the journey with others, which is part of it. So that's another thing. And we'll be piloting an online course so you can deepen your happiness practice yourself. And then we will be training people to bring the skills that they learn to their communities through after-school programs and so on, and make a real difference. But, essentially, help spread the word. Happiness is a choice. We all can up our levels of happiness, and, we invite all of your readers to be part of this. Get the movie to your community, start a happiness circle, be in touch. We need everyone's gifts, talents, and caring to grow this movement.
Ah, I love it. Randy, thank you. Thank you so much for taking time to be here with our listeners, and just wish you many blessings on the getting the Project Happiness out, and encourage the listeners to go to projecthappiness.com and participate and be in touch with Randy, and just get this thing growing and just exuberantly out there. So, Randy, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Ken, for this wonderful time together. And I'll just share a quote, which I love, with your listeners, and that's, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive, and then do it. Because what the world needs are people who have come alive.
Wow. And with that, beloved listeners, my dear Randy, until we meet again, God bless, and goodbye for now.
Thank you, Ken. Bye-bye.